Zach, welcome to my podcast, Behind Golf with Me. Great opportunity to speak to people like yourself in the game of golf, in the golf industry, who are very hands-on with it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, player yourself to the previous life, should we say. You've got an amazing story of which I was really keen to have the opportunity to speak with you today and run people through kind of your story, because we always hear about the Rory McIlroys and the Danny Willetts and what they go through, but yours took a bit of a twist on its own, in its own little world. Just give us a bit of an insight into who you are, Zach Gould.
Yeah, no, but first of all, thanks for having me on. Excited to come on and share my story. And like you said, really, there's lots of success stories that we see out there, but there's so many other stories that not other people have the platform to share on, and there's so many learning, I suppose, opportunities for young golfers or all golfers trying to improve, really. So, yeah. No, happy to come on and share. But no, I suppose my whole DNA is golf. I still see myself from an identity perspective as a golfer, although I've gone on to do fitness and various other things in the business world now. At its core, my DNA is I'm a golfer.
Yeah.
Started golf at age 6. I was very introverted as a young person. Okay. I think when I reflect on why did I sort of gravitate towards golf, I think, well, it's one of the only sports you can go for hours and hours, play on your own. You don't necessarily have to speak to people, those types of things. I think that was the thing that sort of brought me into the sport initially. But I was fascinated with just trying to get better and improve, and as we all know, you'll never master this game, but I think as a young kid you feel like you're gonna and you can, and I think that's what really sort of hooked me in. So I started playing at age 6 with one of my dad's friends. That's kind of how I got into golf. My parents don't play, and I'm not from a golf background or anything. It was just something I kind of seen and I wanted to give a go, and I was, I suppose, fairly gifted at hitting a ball initially, which was recognized by my dad's friend, and then it kind of accelerated from there, really. Yeah.
But you're Welsh.
Yep.
Your golf club was the Vale of Glamorgan, the Vale resort that we're at today, filming.
Yep.
This and playing on the golf course today.
Yeah.
Is this your club? Is this where it all kind of started for you?
No. So I started a golf club, which is in the Welsh Valleys. It don't exist anymore. In fact, I went back there last weekend. This turned into like a Gruffalo trail now. So I went back with my two girls.
Kids,
yeah,
nice.
I know. I loved it. Got some pictures on some of the, you know, the holes I remember and stuff. So that course don't exist anymore, but it was a golf club in Wales, in the Valleys in Wales. I ended up most of my playing career at the Vale. There was some great coaches here, Peter Johnson being kind of director of golf, and his son was a successful golfer, played on the PGA Tour and
wow.
Won. He actually won the Order of Merit on the Nike.com Tour back when it was called the Corn Ferry now.
Corn Ferry now, yeah.
He used to be called the Nike.com Tour. So he had, I suppose, he was one of the coaches in the area that had the experience. There was just so many good golfers at this golf club. Paul Doherty, Jack Doherty, Kenneth Mills, David Price, all players who played for their country. So it was a hub, really, of international golfers. And as you've seen from the golf course, it's an unbelievable setup. So it's no surprise why we all gravitated here. And I played pretty much all of my amateur playing career out of this golf club. So it has a big, I suppose, personal feeling to me here, and I love coming back here, and as you've seen, I've seen all the members and good to see old faces and stuff, so it has a spot in my heart, this club.
You can get a sense of it. It's a bit like when I go back to my club, which is where I'm based now, which is great. You get to see all the old faces that you grew up playing golf with, who supported you through all the ups and downs, should we say, of golf. It's a great facility. It's got a great feel to it, obviously linked to the Welsh rugby as well.
Yep.
They're based here, is that right?
Yeah, so WRU are based here. They've been here for quite a while. As you can see, the facilities in terms of the rugby pitches, when you come in, you wouldn't have seen it, but behind the driving range, they've got an indoor barn where they do all the indoor training, where it's got altitude training and all those different things. So
for rugby. Yeah.
Then Cardiff City come here, Wales football come here at some point. So it's had a real pedigree of Welsh sport here. So it's very well known in the area, but not just for golf, obviously for other sports as well.
And you you started playing for Wales at quite a young age, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was the youngest. I was the youngest person to play in the boys' home internationals, which is England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. Yeah. And you all play against each other in various countries where it kind of rotates. So I played 5 boy internationals. So technically, I was playing 5 years above my age, if that makes sense. Admittedly, Wales are not the strongest at boys' level,
okay. But
I went unbeaten in the whole 5 years in the singles. So even in my first year, where I was playing against players 5 years older than me, I didn't lose a match, and that continued for 5 years. So yes, it is a little bit easier, let's say, to get into the Welsh team, but I was playing at that level at a very young age.
So do you remember my brother? Did you play in? Were you playing in when he was playing for Wales? Were you around in that same sort of squad setup?
Yeah, same time. So Paul, we were going back on in terms of the year. So I played. I remember actually in 2004 and 5, we were drawn in loads of events together.
Yeah.
And Paul was. We were both in the same squad where we went out to Portugal and those types of things.
Yeah,
so I've played a lot with your brother over the years.
Yeah.
I was gonna mention today, but I was the annoying little junior at that point, and I think I got his nerves. But no, I played loads of golf with Paul. So yeah, good memories.
But when did golf? Because I think there's always like a tipping point in golf where, especially for people that either turn pro or are looking to go down as a career within the game. When did golf get serious for you? Like, when did you really think, this is what I want to do, this is my future, this is all I know, this is what I want to get involved with?
I suppose small moments, really. Obviously, playing for Wales is a moment, do you know what I mean? Where, you know, your signpost is one of the best in your country, and I'm playing with boys who were definitely different in terms of stature, do you know what I mean? They were men, and I was still a boy. But there's a couple of moments. It's definitely that as a moment. There's I remember playing for my county for the first time, and I was 10 years of age.
Yeah.
I think to myself, I'm playing with players a lot older than me here. They must see, I must have some ability to play this game. I think that the real pinnacle moment really is when I played Junior Ryder Cup in 2004, and you go out to the Ryder Cup and you see the best players in the world. I think that was probably the moment I thought, right, this is the career that I want to do.
And how old were you in 2004?
16, 15, so 16.
At 15, 16, you were kind of thinking, this is my future.
Yeah.
This is getting serious now, and I want to be taking this on a more serious level.
Yeah. And, you know, there's loads of things. I never really played many other sports, so you could arguably say, well, from the moment I picked up a club,
it was it.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Being a Welshman, massively passionate about rugby and Welsh football and those types of things, but I only ever played golf. So there's something in that where I didn't really take to any other sports, and that's kind of what I stuck with.
I think about that. I think about, you know, if somebody asked me a question, when did I start taking it seriously? But something jumped up with what you were saying there was, you know, you played for your county. So at some stage you would have played for your club, you then play for the county, and then you get picked to play for your country. Did you ever think about, and this is something I thought about when I was certainly coming up through the ranks of playing for my club, then playing for the men's team of the club, and then playing for the county, you bang through these ceilings. So you may have felt like a little bit of anxiousness or nervousness, let's say playing for your first junior team, and then for the first time you play for the men's team, and then into the county team, and then into the country, and then getting even further afield from that for the Junior Ryder Cup.
Mm.
Do you ever remember that? Is that something that really ever, or did you just take it all in your stride, do you think?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because I was definitely taking it in my stride, definitely, because I never felt fazed at any point during those years, and I was a bad loser. I'll admit that. Do you know what I mean? And as a youngster, when I reflect, like even in sports day, if I lost, I'd be really upset. So yeah. I was just so competitive, and I just think when you look at golf as a sport, it's probably one of the only sports where I don't stop you technically playing good. If we were playing tennis together, there's a certain strategy I could adopt that would stop you. If I was playing rugby against you, I could build muscle, be faster, stronger, whatever it might be. But in golf, technically no one stops you. It's your ability to get around the golf course.
Yeah.
I think just with my sort of competitive nature, I really want to go out there one and win, and I want to show people how good I am. And that's why I approached, I suppose, every small milestone. I never ever really felt my depth until I started playing badly.
Okay.
And that's when I suppose my mindset and certain things started to shift.
The reason I asked that question is because I was the opposite. So I felt phased at every level I went through. But what happened with me is that when I, let's say, played for the first time I ever played, for, I remember playing for the men's county team, for the first team. And I remember then going back down and playing for the junior team or my club team. And I remember thinking, like, this is no problem anymore. Like, those nerves are gone because I'd already gone to another level.
Yeah.
And then after that, it didn't really. But I remember at every level I went to, even then going out to America for college golf, you know, I remember my first tournament just being a little bit anxious about it and going through and having to almost like bust through ceilings. But
yeah,
I'm always interested to find out from those players that are more elite, should we say, that strive beyond. How do they take it? And I think you've answered that question quite nicely in the fact that you took it all in your stride. It was also like it was meant to happen like that. It was meant to be. I was meant to be in here. You didn't have that like imposter syndrome that maybe some people have. But something jumped out to me as well when I was helping manage the Devon County team, manage the second team, the development team. I went up to England Golf Woodall Spa. And one of the coaches said, it might have actually been Nigel Edwards at the time, actually. he was Welsh, he now works for England. I think he still works for England Golf, or certainly GB and I, because he did the Olympics.
Just the Olympics, yeah.
Who you know would know very well. I think he said something along the lines, it's really important to put speed bumps in the way of these kids. So as they go through there, you kind of want to see them succeed, but you need to see them fail. You need to see them fall, because you need to see how they react to that and know that golf is not just one route up and then it can fall off the edge of a cliff for some players. So it's really important to see them succeed, but also see them stumble a little bit on the same way.
Yeah.
And you talked about there that when your golf, let's say, started to go a little bit, let's say, south, you struggled to deal with that at that point. Would you say that that's a good process for coaching now, developing on?
I suppose there's two things, obviously, just reflecting back a little bit in terms of like the perception. So like you mentioned, you sometimes felt anxious at those newer levels.
Yeah.
I don't want to be naive and I suppose mislead. I still had feelings of nervousness, but it was excitement. It's how I interpreted it.
Yeah.
I weren't going there fearful. I was going there excited, still nervous.
Yeah.
I'm excited to show you how good I am.
Yeah.
So I think it's the way in which I interpreted it. And then on your second point, in terms of speed bumps, being very transparent with you, when it started to go wrong in golf, that's the first time I'd ever experienced any failure.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to handle it. Now looking at, you know, what I went on to achieve from an academic perspective, going on PhD and setting up business and, you know, the ups and downs I've had of a business. And people now describe me how mentally resilient I am. If you had asked me that question at 19, I would have perceived that as I'm actually mentally weak. Because of that experience, I've channeled all that in a positive way and I've applied it to other areas of my life. So to I suppose, answer the question, failure, one, is inevitable and it's so important. It's a massive part of success.
Yeah.
And, you know, I suppose getting too deep, I'm going to, in terms of my parenting styles, I don't want my girls to be afraid of failure.
Yeah.
It's part of life. And actually, the true champions and the successful people are the best at learning from it, overcoming it and putting the right action in place to go on to achieve the next goal, whatever arena that's in. So I don't think we need to be afraid of failure. It's not the end of us.
Yeah.
It's horrible and it's painful, but they're the things that I suppose stop us and kick us on, really. So 100%, it's going to happen. And I think especially in golf, if you go through these real tough times and you get through them, the mental resilience you're going to have is probably what it takes to win on the DP World Tour, PGA Tours, majors.
Yeah.
They've all been through it.
And just to put some context into kind of where we're going with this podcast and what we're talking about, and we're talking about failure and success and all those things, is that, you know, you were on a track playing with some of the best, you know, the people that we see on TV now. You were on track playing alongside those guys, not only playing alongside them, but beating them from time to time. you were on track to becoming a professional golfer who was going to become a touring professional golfer, whether you'd be on the DP World Tour, whether you'd be on the PGA Tour, or whether you'd have moved into LIV. You were on that track to become the next generation of professional golfers. But for you, it didn't quite unfold that way.
No.
In the same way it did for Rory McIlroy or Danny Willett and those people that you played in the Junior Ryder Cup with or whatnot. Just give me that. Go to that Junior Ryder Cup moment. Just tell me, who are those players that you would have played with and against?
So, yeah, 2004 was the Junior Ryder Cup team. It was, I suppose, against that team, it's understanding that bit first. Six-man team and six girls are selected to go and play against America. To qualify, you've got to be, it's a little bit different now, it's an order of merit, but you have to be in the top four of a single event called the European Young Masters.
Okay.
Then there's two wildcard picks.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough, I went and won that event. So
wow.
It's which was in Austria, in Mühlhof, where they've played Challenge Tour and a lot of senior tour golf now. So I won that event. Rory McIlroy was second or third, so I kind of qualified by my own right. It's a bit of a shootout. You've got 1 week to get in that team.
Right.
And then if you don't make it, you're relying on wild card picks.
A bit like tour school.
A little bit like tour school.
Yeah.
So I went and won it. I played in it three times, though. I finished third, fourth, and first.
Wow. And to shoot, what would you have had to shot score-wise to win it? What sort of numbers were you posting back then?
Then, well, I shot 2 under, 6 under, 1 over at 15 years of age on, you know, a championship golf course.
Yeah.
And I managed to win. And then you get, you know, shortlisted and take through to the Ryder Cup. And that was one of the best experiences of my life. Do you know what I mean? Tiger Woods, massive hero of mine. First time I got a good chance to watch him up close, you know, behind the ropes, see him, you know, all the shots he hits and the ball flight he hits it on and how powerful he was at that point. But the experience is incredible. So you play against America, like I mentioned, Rory McIlroy was in that team. Oliver Fisher was a really talented young golfer.
Yeah. He was England's number one at the time. He was again projected to be another Faldo, wasn't he?
Faldo took him under his wing. Yeah, he's part of the team, and all of those bits.
Him and Nick Doherty.
Yeah. And he was incredible. You know, Mr. 59, shot 59 on the DP World Tour.
In Portugal, I think.
A few years back. And I was selected to hit the opening tee shot because it was away. And obviously Europe hit the opening tee shot. And I pegged up against Mr. Tony Fina, who was unbelievable. I'm sure everyone's seen the Netflix, but he got, you know, a massive following, big family. I remember looking down the first hole. There must have been 500 people, and I think 300-400 people were there for Tony. Like, and they were all his family. It was
big family. Well, yeah,
huge family man. Yeah. That was an incredible experience.
Where was it played?
The actual Ryder Cup was played at Oakland Hills, where Conor Montgomery held the winning putt.
Okay, yeah.
Luke Donald was in that team. All the guys you see now, kind of being captains and different things. The actual the Junior Ryder Cup then was played at Westfield, Ohio, which was just outside.
Right.
Now they actually play on the same course.
Oh, do they?
So yeah, and they play just before in the practice days, and
they're
then they stay for the Ryder Cup then.
Wow.
So it's a little bit different, but it's like for like.
Yeah.
So no, just incredible, really, to be around some of those players. At the time, you don't know what they're going to go on and achieve. Super talented.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's easy to say. It was obvious what Rory was going to do. Super talented, won loads of amateur stuff. But you don't know he's going to go on to be one of the best golfers in the world, you know?
No. But he seemed like he had that, I want to say that cockiness to him. Did he? I remember Paul always saying to me, he used to go to like national events and things, and he'd be the little kid literally bouncing around the place. And with a cockiness, an arrogance, you know, watch me type attitude, you know?
Yeah, incredible self-belief. And it is a moment that I specifically remember. So considering the year, Tiger Woods was just so far ahead of anyone.
2004. Yeah.
Like he had this aura, like nobody could beat him.
Was that Tiger Slam era?
He did win four. But it's around when
I think 2004 or something like that.
He had him in 2000. I think he was being coached by Hank Haney at the time. Maybe he had a lot of, anyway, the mindset of Tiger and people playing against him. And I remember asking Rory, clear to this day, I said, "How good do you generally think you're going to be?"
Yeah.
And he just said to me, a straight face, he just said, in the next 5 years, I think I'm going to be world number one. And then I went to intervene. He said, no, if not world number one, well on my way to being world number one. But he said it to me as if he knew that was going to happen. And it wasn't long after, 5 years later, five, 6 years later, he played in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
So he wasn't that far off, but he had this mindset and this belief that he was going to do it. Yes, it could come across arrogant, cocky, but it was cold and it was straight. He knew where he was going. And that's something that really sticks with me. And we were close friends at that point.
Amazing. Amazing mindset of how that... So track that on then from there. You finish your Junior Ryder Cup, an amazing experience. You're starting to take golf a little bit more serious because you're hanging around with the players like Rory McIlroy, becoming friends with players like Rory McIlroy. What happens from there on?
So I suppose my decision from that point was, right, I'm going to make a career out of golf.
Okay.
So finished GCSEs and so on. So I left school, give up education.
Yeah.
I thought about going to America on a scholarship.
Did you get offers?
Got quite a few offers. I went to visit Augusta State, Arkansas. In fact, me and Rory, without using Rory too much, we both flew out to East Tennessee State to go there. There's lots of Welsh and Irish and British-based players who were there. Didn't really back myself academically. Wasn't really in it, which is... I suppose hard to believe when I went on and done a PhD, but people.
So did you feel confident at that time of university? Did university kind of, whereas golf didn't necessarily scare you, did university life of opening books up and studying? And
a little. I was only going there to play golf.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That would have been my mindset.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really apply myself in school, so I didn't think I had the ability.
Yeah.
Whereas when I started to apply myself, I was like, well, I can actually do this. And then went on to the different route, but that was kind of the moment. So I left school at 16. I was 5'4", which what I understand now is a massive moment, really. I was a late developer. I got a picture on the beach with my arm around my mum, and she's 5'5", and I'm just shorter than her. And then
how tall are you now?
I'm 6 foot. So within 2 years, I had a huge growth spurt.
Okay.
And then these are kind of some of the moments now that I reflect on, because between 16 and 18, I didn't have any technical intervention. No golf lessons. I was playing down in Australia, South Africa. I played for Europe again against Asia for Pacific down in New Zealand.
How are you representing your country, knowing the process of which what I know of county coaching, like I've developed off county coaching over the years, and then going into national coaching of what Paul got, you know?
Yeah.
How on earth do you slip through the net, but how do you get through going through all the coaching processes of Portugal and all those sorts of things that you'd have gone off with your national team? How do you not have a golf lesson?
Yeah. I think
Did they just leave you alone? Or
I think there was an element of fear, a little bit.
From them?
Potentially.
When I talk about them, I mean coaches and the people that run the unions or the national teams or whatever like that. So
potentially, but the programs are very different then. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They're very much, I wouldn't describe them as development programs. No. I would say they were get together, highly competitive, you know, really test your game and your skills. And I probably think the real coaching come outside of that, whether that was your personal coach or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I kind of just, I went on things on my own. And I always come back now, any young golfers that kind of, I suppose, I'm sharing a story with, I'm like, you've got to get the right people around you. Honest people, people who keep you on track, obviously highly skilled in terms of their technical knowledge and so on. Because as good as it was at 16, if the right foundations are not put in the right areas, it will regress. This game will get you. So the program was very much play and compete, which is very good, but the basics need to still be there in place. Like you mentioned, a really good friend of mine, still good friends to this day, Nigel Edwards, was performance director of Wales Golf. He said, look, something needs to change now. Your peers at 18, your peers have kicked on. Rory went and got his card at Dunhill in seven events, finished second there.
Yeah.
Ollie Fisher was on the European Tour. Danny Willett was world number one, amateur, off in America. And he's like, you're not at that level. So I was frustrated.
This was Nigel Edwards.
Pulled me under, you know, to one side. And we were really good mates. We travelled and stuff together, but enough was enough.
He was still competing at the time?
Against them with me, really.
Yeah.
Because he was still playing Walker Cup and different things. But I think he stood there and watched me not fulfilling my potential, and he realized certain things needed to change. Okay. And he just pulled me, and then he just said, look, we need some intervention. So then I flipped it, and I just went down this highly technical route and really got lost on the wrong information. And I was on that journey for like 2 years, trying to make swing changes that I couldn't make, playing in high competitive environment on the toughest course in the world. Remember, as an amateur, you're playing Birkdale, you're playing Lytham, you're playing St. Andrews, you're playing, you know, open championship courses, trying to make massive swing changes, hardly keeping it on the golf course. I don't care how mentally resilient you are, there's going to become a point where you're going to break. So I got to 20 and I just couldn't take it anymore. I had a decent season, still playing for Wales at that point. I finished second in the Brabazon down in Trevose. I had a decent season, but I just wasn't filling my potential, and I just couldn't make these changes, and I didn't have control of the ball, and I just said, like, I need to take a break. And I never went back, which is mad. I never went back. It was a Friday afternoon in October, and a mentor of mine, he still helps me to this day. I went and spoke to him. I said, look, I don't know what to do. I need to take a break from golf. I don't really have any academic sort of background. I was going to go and apply for a job in House of Fraser, which is a big retail store in Cardiff, in the diesel shop, because I love diesel jeans. So I was like, right, you get free diesel jeans, and I go and apply for a job in there. That was where I was. That's how lost I was.
Yeah.
So I went and, you know, he got huge experience in business and sport and different things. So he just said, no. He said, what are you going to do now? He said, you go back to school. He said, you're going to tell the story, what's happened, and you're going to be amazed who's going to help you. So bearing in mind, I'm 20 turning 21.
Yeah.
It was a Friday afternoon then when I drove down to my old high school. They were delivering PE on the field. I called over, sir, I need to have a chat with you. He said, come back at 3:30. Told him a story. I said, I need some direction. He said, get into class. You're going to do your A-levels. So I'm 20 turning 21. I've got all this life experience. I traveled the world. You know, I'm a man at that point. And I went and sat in a class with 16-year-olds.
Okay.
And there's no disrespect to them, but they're still kids. On the weekends, they're playing Xbox and video games and those types of things, whereas I've had all this life experience. So it was a massive sort of moment, really. And people even say to me, how you had the mindset to go back and do that? I was like, I had no choice, really. I didn't know where I was going to go. So I got my head down and I started studying and I started understanding more about sports science, and then there were psychological aspects, there was physiological, and I really just started to relate to a lot of the materials.
Yeah.
Got into fitness because I was really fit, really, as a golfer, and I seen it as a massive vehicle to improve, where back then it probably wasn't viewed as that. Now I think it is, from, you know, all the best players in the world showing the benefits it had. And I took this ambition of being the best golfer in the world, and I just repositioned it into being the best strength and conditioning coach in the world. And I never wanted to get any role, any clients, any exposure based on my playing background. I want to earn it. And that was all I was fascinated on for about 8-9 years. Well, it was. So that was 2008, and I graduated from my PhD in 2017. And I just give it everything in terms of academia.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, golf and fitness become more mainstream. People wanted to say, right, okay, what are the best training methods? What are the best testing methods? So that was the journey I was on. And I started getting lots of exposure then, and lots of the golfers wanted to come and see me. And I suppose my business and my sort of profile and identity shifted a bit then into more Zach Gould, the golf fitness person, not necessarily the golfer who used to play in the Junior Ryder Cup. And I'm still struggling to come to terms with that, but that's kind of how the evolution, really, of my identity has shifted.
Did you lose the love of the game? Because even just sat there in your classroom, you know, going through this process, going through the years of education, was there times where you were still thinking about, like, that must have been tough times in the classroom where you were like, oh, I'm just not getting this, or, you know, for me personally, I used to look out the window a lot, you know? But You know, so was there times where you were like, ah, just, you know, all the, you know, this event's on at the moment, and wouldn't it be nice to be playing in that? Or then seeing Rory McIlroy move on and Danny Willett move on and all these players that you've played against. And did you ever then, did you reflect back? Did you lose the love of it? Because you didn't go back, so.
No, I think.
Or were you so dedicated to what you were trying to do? Because I see that mindset with you. Once you're in it,
yeah,
you're committed to
that's it.
And that's your journey for that point. Is that kind of what happened with golf? Is it just like, okay, I'm just going to bench this, going to focus what I'm doing here, and then eventually I might come back to golf and I might fall in love with it again. But was the love gone?
No. I've always watched it. I've always been around it. You could see when we played. I just love hitting the shots. It's never gone. It still hasn't. I'm still as passionate about it now as I was then.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Watching it and even now, I still feel like I've got that ability.
Got that ability.
And that's the tough bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sort of in my mind processing that. I'm not in the slightest, I suppose, envious. I'm a massive supporter of these players and I know how tough this game is. So I watch it with joy and pride. I'm like really rooting them all on.
Yeah.
So I haven't got that mindset. I want it for myself,
yeah,
but I also want them to have it. But I think reflecting back on it, and I'm very much like this as a person, I think I benched it and I blocked it, and I probably didn't really, this is going to sound weird, but I probably didn't grieve it that long. I put it on the shelf and I just put all of that energy into studying.
Yeah.
And I think then when I finished studying, it was probably a bit of a moment, but I've put all that energy now into business.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, since October, I've started playing again this year. So I've only been back out in less than a year. I'm just so passionate now about showing really the world what I can do.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can help your body achieve these things. So I'm kind of just in that phase now. But never lost love for it. I think I parked it, didn't grieve it for long enough, but just put all of my energy into being the best fitness coach in the world.
You talked to me about earlier, you talked to me about the coaching element, and we're not going to name names, but you felt somewhat, not let down, but maybe that the coaching, the avenue that you went down with coaching,
mm-hmm,
didn't really assist you, didn't really help you. From the type of player you are or were to then going very much down the technical side of it. Does it still grate on you?
That bit does. Yeah. I think I'm very good at calling BS now when I see it,
yeah,
from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know about the body, knowing my experience, like you know, I'm not a PGA qualified pro, but I understand what the swing should be doing to perform. If I'm working with players, I never tell players who they need to be coached by. But if I hear information that is just ridiculous,
yeah,
I will be the first to say that's wrong. You need to go and find the right answers. But I tell you, that's not right.
Yeah.
So I'm very good at processing and giving that information and understanding that. My advice would be, don't need to always go for the most famous coaches in the world. They're not necessarily the best.
Yeah.
And two wrongs make a right in golf, and that's where I was stuck between. Someone's trying to fix something that would never match my pattern, and in a million years, no matter what I do, that model would not have worked for me. Whether that was from their bias, their model, whatever it might be, that would never ever work for me. And I know that purely because I got to a point where I couldn't hit a ball.
Yeah.
And when you see me hit it now, I have got control over that ball. And that's just through the journey I've been on of, right, let's put it back the way it was. Let's build on the things I was good at. So I think people who are kind of starting to think about golf coaching, from top level players to, you know, don't always chase the name. Make sure it's the right information for you. And two wrongs do make a right in golf. And it's all about model matching for me.
Go back to young Zach. Go back now to 18, 19 years old, pretty much in your prime, let's say, just about on the verge of really kind of considering probably a professional avenue. What would you tell young Zach now from what you know now? And And who do they put around them? Mm. What team do they have to put in place to help them succeed, to go that next step from there?
Yeah. I think the first bit, if I was literally having a conversation myself, which feels weird,
yeah.
I'd say everything's going to be okay. Don't panic.
Yeah.
Because there is a moment where you're panicking because you're like, well, what am I going to do? But there's life after golf. That's the first thing. And I think that just lowers your perceptions and your stress levels of it, because you put the whole world into this,
yeah,
and you do start to scramble and panic. But I think for anyone listening out there, it's okay. There is life after golf. You will be okay, whether it's on the European Tour or as a golf coach or whatever. It's okay. So I think it just helps lower the stress levels on that side. Yeah. In terms of team, I'm a massive advocate of putting the development blocks in place. It's not being reactive, it's being proactive. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone wants to hit the ball a long way, it's really simple. You have the right technology, you have an efficient golf swing, and you got to be fit and strong. Yeah. In my world, you come and have a session with me, I cannot make you strong in one session. But what I can do is get you to understand your body, what things you need to be doing, and then put the right principles in place so you can consistently do that over time.
Yeah.
That's what I describe as a program. And I think we need that from a fitness perspective, a swing perspective, a mindset perspective. And then there's this whole bit that sits on top. It's understanding the social demands, the travel demands, you know, the stress, the on-course demand. It's kind of then this fourth avenue of all the rest of it, do you know what I mean? So, and that's the way in which I very much see all of the game. Who you put in those places is over to you,
yeah,
because
yeah,
there's so many variables.
Yeah.
There's someone with really high technical knowledge but might not get the softer skills. There's someone with incredible soft skills that really get you to buy in and take you on the journey with maybe not the right technical knowledge. It's not for me to say who those people are.
Yeah.
But I think it's putting that program in place, and it's a developmental program, not a reactive program.
Yeah.
Don't wait till the house is on fire to get the hose out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Build a house that's not going to catch on fire, basically. So that's kind of how I see it now. So when I do start working with players, I do try and understand that as much as I can.
Yeah.
What I feel like I'm quite good at is bridging the gap between the strands, really.
Yeah.
Physical, technical, and a bit of mindset. Not that I'm a psychologist or anything, but I feel like I've been there with people when they're struggling and when it's been good. But it's fine. I've thought these things. You will come through.
Yeah.
We need the right people now to help you put that in place.
The game of golf has become more physical than it's ever been, isn't it? Right now, you know, the objective to play on the PGA Tour and is to be successful is to be long enough to really eat up those par fives and be four under par before you even kind of get going. So having strength in the right way is really important, but also for longevity, because we've watched the likes of your Woozies and your Fowler, even though Fowler was quite fitness driven, but let's say Sam Torrence or, you know, Ian Woos and them coming up through. They weren't necessarily big gym goers, but their game wasn't necessarily the power game that we have now, that you have to have in order to compete at the highest level. Fitness for you, is that something you focus on with lots of players as well? Or not even just players, but let's take players out of the equation. You know, people that come to you because they're golfers and they want to, you know, they want to be physically fitter or be able to, you know, continue, almost like stop getting any injuries along the way.
Yeah, no, it's both sides of the coin, isn't it? Like, it's easy to turn on Netflix and see what the guys are doing in the gym and they're hitting it 330 yards through the air.
Yeah.
That's happened in all sports, do you know what I mean? And that's because from a sports science perspective, we just know more,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's like, we know that getting strong in your lower body is going to increase swing speed.
Yeah.
We know that if you become more mobile, you're going to move and turn better in your golf swing. It just sometimes takes a Tiger Woods to make the world realise that.
Yeah.
But you've seen in other sports, when rugby went professional, do you mean you've seen a shift in terms of strength and conditioning, the All Blacks took it up another notch, the rest of the world follows.
Yeah.
Same in golf, Tiger Woods did it. And then, you know, the output for that is you've seen DeChambeau doing it and Dustin Johnson 10 years later, do you know what I mean? Because we've watched the best players in the world do it. The benefit is, is that by getting stronger, more robust, more durable, it's going to keep us playing the game longer.
Yeah.
So you've got your tournament professionals, and you only got to look at the seniors tour, the legends tour with Langer and all those players. They're all super fit and they're going to keep going really. But then you've got your club golfer who, let's say they're getting closer to retirement, 60 years of age. They get out of bed one day and they absolutely love golf, but their back's gone and they can't play golf anymore. So what my job is really is to help educate and inspire and make sure people have got the right information. So all they're doing is putting the building blocks in place, keeping their body fit, strong, mobile. So we lower the risk of these niggles, serious injuries occurring. Let's be honest, later in life, because that's when you're more exposed to that. So you can keep playing this game. Like we were speaking to someone on the putting green earlier who's in the bogey behind us. He's 80 years of age. We can play this game forever.
Yeah.
But if our body breaks down, we can't.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, physical fitness now and golf go very much hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah.
I think, we've had the opportunity to meet through Under Armour.
Yeah.
Through us both being involved in Under Armour in shape or form. My thing with Under Armour for this year certainly was all about the shoes, and I wanted the story. I wanted to see how I could use the development of shoes. How does that story look to be able to generate, use the ground forces a little bit more? How important is clothing and shoe footwear and things like that, how important is that for in your game as well, in your world?
It's huge, isn't it? Like, I suppose you just reflect on Under Armour as a brand. They're there to make athletes better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's their ethos, that's their philosophy. That's my personal philosophy. I'm there to make golfers better, and I see fitness as a huge vehicle to do that.
Yeah.
And it is the big building blocks. We've got to be strong, we've got to be powerful, we've got to have the foundation to be able to do it, but we have to have the right tech, and I've, like yourself, I've been massively invested in the shoe. I personally use it, I know the science that's behind it. All my PhD research was, within force application, how that transfers through the body. And in my view is, it's like a set of golf clubs. I can make you big and strong for, but if you've got the wrong clubs, you're going to be losing power. How much, or speed, how much, we don't know.
Yeah.
Or we could, test and retest. And I see, like the shoes and other areas of the game, there's so much research and tech that's been invested into it.
Yeah.
And it's just helping making golfers better. And if we can hit it further, it's easier, let's be honest. So no, I suppose on the shoe side, I was, I loved the whole project, and testing them myself, and, the different compartments in the shoe and the way in which the lace performed and the, design of the spike, all of that was just right up my street. And, I love being a part of the brand and finding out what, more and how we're building on that,
It's fascinating. I have found it absolutely fascinating to go through that process with those guys and actually just like little tiny little light bulb moments, even for me, from as being a coach as well. I found it absolutely fascinating this year working with them and going through some stuff with them. It's been great to see how it's developed and where it's come from and where it's going.
Yeah, that's the exciting bit.
That's the exciting bit, isn't it? Well, I've really enjoyed this chat because there is, like you said, there is life beyond golf. You got a fantastic family, you got a great business, things are moving in the right direction for you. You've learned a lot along your journey to this, even just to this point. And I think, people don't get to hear these stories, but what happens is you get to grab that experience that you've got and put it back into the game of golf in some way, shape, or form. And I know over a period of time, you're going to help so many people, whether they're young juniors developing up through the system or allowing people to continue playing this amazing game that we chose to play. You're going to put so much back into the game, which is just fantastic to hear from your story.
Exactly. And that's why I'm very honest. Do you know what I mean? It is my reflection, it is how I see it.
Yeah.
But it's easy to sit there and I suppose be a little bit jealous and blame other people, which I suppose is argument of that. But I take full responsibility. All I want to do now is share everything I've learned and everything I know in the most honest and respectful way I can to inspire others to ask better questions and hopefully improve their game to whatever level that is. And that's how I see it now. And that's the quest I'm on. And, coming on your platform and building my own platform, that is the driver.
Yeah.
Jeremy, to share that story and our message?
Well, it's a fantastic story, one of which I'm so glad we've had the opportunity to sit down here and talk about it, and had the opportunity to get out on the golf course and, yep, and play with you and watch it, watch your game unfold again. I hope your love of the game continues, because you've got so much to offer, like I've already said. And yeah, thank you very much for your time. And
thank you
for all those listening or watching this video. Go and check you out, Zach Gould.
Yeah, Zach Gould Golf.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Nice one.
Cheers, bro.